Market Watch is proudly brought to you by Top Sport, home of the Top Sport betting multi. Gamble responsibly. Call 1800 858 858.
And we're back for Market Watch, presented proudly by Top Sport. And we've got, well, two of the usual suspects now. I think we've replaced Jimmy. He's still on his trip around the States. I saw he was at the most magical place in the world there, Disney World. He's having a great time with the family. I wish him all the best. But we're here to do our normal routine where we've got Jared from Reading the Play on the back of a very impressive week of NFL punting. And we've got test player number 400, Brad Haddon, back in the chair after a very impressive first up performance. He was very good fresh, and we're looking to see how he goes second up syndrome. But boys, how are we going?
Morning, gentlemen. Tristan, I'm not sure if you saw the memo come through, but I think Jimmy's asked if he can pop in as a guest next week, guest on the podcast. That'll be nice and interesting. But yes, there he was swanning around basketball courts. I think he was at the Staples Center and then downtown Disneyland. And the really good thing is he's still struggling with connection because we found another couple of winners and he wasn't on either of them. So there's a good thing for the week.
it was one of the best things my IT department's done for many a year, blocking access to the United States just when Jimmy's backed a couple of winners. So it saved us plenty of cash, and very, very happy with that outcome. And Bradley, how are you going?
Mate, I'm excited, mate. We've got an Ashes coming in, 6 days, a big bash about to start this weekend. So I think we've found a new Australian keeper with Tim Payne's absence. So it looks like Alex Carey's going to get the nod with the gloves. So, it's always good to welcome someone into the brotherhood and such a good man in Alex Carey.
Yeah, well, that was something I was wanting to have a chat about. Like, obviously, Alex Carey's been the heir apparent for a long time, you would have thought, and probably it felt like maybe he found a bit of a form slump just at the wrong time. But I'm personally glad they've kept the faith with him because he's been the player that we've all expected to fill the void. Are you comfortable with the selection of him coming into the side?
Yeah, I am. I think he's earned the right to have first crack. He got a timely 100 the other day under a lot of pressure, which I like. But I haven't really looked at the batting. I think all keepers will come in or do a job at number 7, change momentum in the game, move it forward when they have to. But it's more the keeping to me. Where the challenge is going to come is day 4 and 5, keeping to Nathan Lyon. He spent a lot of time up to the stumps. And Alex has had a pretty good apprenticeship there. He's had Rashid Khan at the strikers who he's kept really well to. So his big tests will come up to the stumps day 4 and 5. But young Inglis also, a lot of talk's been about him. He's a pretty polished cricketer at 26. He'll get his chance down the track. But it's going to be an interesting 6 months for him now. He's on the radar now. He'll be watched a lot closely by broadcasters and media. So he'll have an interesting 6 months with some eyes on him to try to put some pressure on Alex.
Yeah, very.
What about the weather going into the first test and what this track might be like, Brad? I mean, we've had nothing but absolute drenching rain here in Queensland and, you know, the best part of about a week. And then looking at the forecast over the next week into Thursday, you know, there's still rain forecast for almost every day. Major media reports this morning about how they attempt to try and get this track and pitch ready. I mean, it's a ground that does drain very well, but with the humidity and that moisture around, it's going to be a really interesting toss.
Yeah, it will be. And the one thing you do with the toss of the Gabba, you actually don't look at the wicket at all. You don't take any notice of the wicket, you look up. I'd imagine if the Aussies win the toss, I'd like to bat first, but you look up in the sky. If you've got overhead conditions and it looks like it'll swing around, you may think about bowling first. But to me, Gabba isn't always a bat first wicket, no matter what the wicket's like. You like runs on the board in that first test match. But if there's a bit of humidity around and overhead conditions, that brings the England bowlers right into it. You've got Anderson, you've got Broad, who one of the great exponents of swing bowling, those two. So conditions will be very handy in England's way. The forecast is true.
Yeah, well, we've got if the Aussies do bat, it's setting the tone for the series ahead. And it looks like Marcus Harris has won one of the opening spots to bat alongside David Warner. Probably the last spot still up for grabs is that fifth batting spot. And any thoughts on who you think's going to get the first crack of that one, Brett?
Yeah, I think Usman Khawaja. I think his record at home is outstanding. And I don't think you bring someone who's 34 years of age into the squad if you're not going to play them. I think he'll sit well at number five, gives experience there to the middle order. He's been playing at number four for Queensland. He's been outstanding all year. So I think he'll get a crack. Travis Head's done everything right. But I think you don't bring someone into the squad at 34 if you're not going to play them.
I have to say, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I can see that, Tristan, you've got England 440 for the first test. There's probably only one of the three of us that will be going to actually put their hand up and back the opposition. But, gee, that looks a big price. When there's all this weather around, all the humidity, the English would just love being able to bowl in those conditions. And looking at the forecast right through to Wednesday next week, there's anywhere between, 4 to 10 mils or more every day. So the humidity is going to stick around. Whichever way the toss goes, $4.40, I would have thought that as a betting pundit, that market should have been far, far closer given the conditions.
Yeah, well, when we spoke last week, the Aussies were $1.70. They're out to $1.85 now. The draw's obviously come tumbling in on the back of the forecast and the rain that we've had. It's into $3.25, and as you say, England at $4.40. But yeah, if they can get the ball moving, it's obviously going to be, the boys haven't had a lot of time in the middle in five-day cricket as well. So, I'm sure they'll be ready and absolutely prepared, but it's one of those things. The format probably hasn't been conducive to the Aussies over the last little bit. So $1.85 is short, but I think this is going to set the tone for the series. And I'm really excited. I'm going to day one there up in Brizzy. So it should be a really good affair.
You're getting worse than Jimmy, mate. You get to seem to end up with an envelope and an invitation to everything. Were sitting at the grand final cheering your own team, the Panthers, home. Here you are, day one at the cricket.
I'm just worried about having to do this show early Thursday morning. I think that might be a bit of a tricky one, so we might have to sub in later on.
Hads will be sitting there doing a commentary, and I'll be sitting at home having a pie with sauce and probably a beer, watching it on telly.
I tell you what, though. This part of the year is exciting for me. The first test at the Gabba, it's always a huge event. Remember the last one years and years ago is when Harmison bowled the first ball to third slip and set the tone. You just can't wait for that first session of the game. See, all the nervous energy comes out. David Warner, if he gets through that first session, I think he's going to dominate the series, but he's got a big contest against Broad. Broad had his measure in the UK. So there's so many storylines going into that first day of the test.
Well, I think the other thing that sets the tone too, a day one of an Ashes test at the Gabba, is the Barmy Army. I mean, they'll just be in full swing. We touched on it last week, but, they love, and they'll just go hard for the first couple of days. It'll be singing, drinking, and the banter will be enormous.
One thing I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Hads, because obviously we know the Barmy Army, we know what they stand for. They're there to have banter. They're there to, stir the crowd up, stir the Aussie players up. But obviously when Tim Payne withdrew from the squad for personal reasons, I thought it was a really touching message that came out of the Facebook group, basically say, we're here to have fun, but like this is important. Do you sort of get that feeling like the band is always in good taste? Like it's always a fun atmosphere and it never goes above the line.
I tell you, the one thing about the Barmy Army, they bring a huge theatre to the game. It's great that they're here. Sometimes they can have 25,000 red-faced pommies at the Boxing Day test singing their songs. But the one thing you do notice about them, and an example of this is Steve Smith in the Ashes. When he got knocked over by Archer, got hit and he missed a test with concussion, he came out and got a double 100 two tests later. They still respect good cricket. They'll give it to you all day. They'll have a lot of banter with you. But if there's big moments in the game where the Australians have wrestled momentum back, they've had a good spell, they always respect good cricket. So that's one thing I like about them. I enjoy the songs. I think some of them are funny. And as you said, we touched on it last week where it's hard to get out of your head sometimes. But they do bring that theatre element to the game. And their songs are actually quite clever, some of them. But the one thing they do is respect the game.
I was lucky enough to go to day one 4 years ago at the Gabba and with a couple of mates. And we walk in and lo and behold, our tickets were sitting right in front of the Barmy Army opposite the dressing rooms. And I have never laughed so much in a day of play. I mean, and as the day went on and the drunker they got and the rowdier their songs were, but also just having fun with themselves, you know, there'd be, you know, by about 2 o'clock, there are a couple of their guys who'd obviously had three or four big days on arrival and then were full of syrup by 2 o'clock and were going to sleep or falling over. And they're absolutely into their own, tipping beers over each other or blowing the trumpet in someone's ear who's gone to sleep. And it was just the funniest day I've ever had at a sporting event.
And now we haven't just got the Ashes to look forward to. We've got the Big Bash, which kicks off Sunday night. And we've got what a cracking game to start the season where we've got the Sixers against the Stars, where it's $1.80 the Sixers and $2 the Stars to start off the tournament. They're two of the heavyweights of the comp, where the Sixers are $4.40 to win the whole thing. They're the favourites. The Stars, $5.50, third pick. The only team in between are the Scorchers at $5.25, Hobart at $6.50. So, looking forward to this game in particular, the season kicking off. I know you were a very proud Sixers man a few years back. Brad, who do you really see is going to take the season alight over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's interesting. Sixers have got an opportunity to do a three-peat, which hasn't happened in the Big Bash. So they were the most consistent and entertaining team, I thought, last year. They played a really attractive brand of cricket. I think Dan Christian played a huge role in that. With his experience in those new power play overs. Melbourne Stars are an interesting one to me. They've been there and thereabouts. They finished a bit lower than they would have liked to this year, but at some stage they've got to come good. To me, Hobart could be a bit of a smoky this year. Matthew Wade will be back for the whole season, who I think will be the leading run scorer in the competition. So, and Renegades, they've got a new coach in David Staker. They had a young list. They recruited well with Nick Madison moving from the Stars to the Renegades. It looks like captain. They'll have Aaron Finch there more often than not this year. So it's a great competition, but it's a great way to start the Sixers and the Stars. Mate, they've got great rivalry. A few injuries to the Sixers. I'm hearing a few of their fast bowls. The Stewart with Bird and Dorsha still under an injury cloud. So, yeah, it's a big first up, but it's going to be a good one at the SCG to be packed out.
Yeah, and looking at one of the markets in particular, the most runs for the Sydney Sixers, we've got James Vince 320 and Josh Philippi 330. Do you see anyone outside of those two that can really push for claims to score the most runs for the Sixers?
Yeah, I do. I see Moses Henriques. He was last Australian tour, test tour was meant to go ahead in South Africa. He was in that squad. He's been in great form for some time now, but circumstances have had he's not in the Australian A team or any of the Australian setups leading into this test series. So I think he's going to have a really big year. And I think his captaincy also brings a calmness back to the Sixers, which I'll benefit a lot. So I see Moses as my pick to lead in run scorers for the Sixers.
Yeah, well, he's 550, so a little bit of value there. We've got a stack of markets up on the website. We're going to have heaps of markets for every single team. We've got tournament fours for individual players, the economy rates, the most Sixers, you know, all these sort of things. So the boys are putting a lot of work in. They'll have it all up there by Sunday, well and truly up before the competition starts. So make sure you jump on there and have a look. And, yeah, really looking forward to the summer of cricket. It's one of the most exciting times and, yeah, can't wait.
Who's the market for most Sixers?
The market we've got for the most Sixers is individual players. So if you look at the Sydney Sixers, for example, what they've got is that we've got Daniel Hughes. We've got over and under 7.5 Sixers for the tournament. So 7.5 overs is 220, unders is 167. And for Vince, we've got $9.50 pick him. So it looks like what the boys have done, they're picking the top two or the top two favoured run scorers in each of the sides and setting a line for each of them, which is a unique market. So any opinion on either of those two blokes?
I don't think Hughes will hit 7 sixes. He's more of a traditional player, uses the pace of the ball well, hits on the ground. So I can't see him going over 7 sixes.
There you go. And then the 26.5 fours, that might be the other option where you can take the over 26.5 if he's going to smoke along the ground. So there's plenty of different options there. Make sure you jump on the site. I'm trying to get my head around all the different markets the boys have put up in the last 24 hours as well. So there's plenty to take your fancy there. Now, why don't we move on to the NRL, where there's been plenty of talk happening in the last week. There's never a dull moment in the season or out the season. And one of the big talking points, I know, Jared, you in particular have been very vocal on this topic over the last week, but there's been a little bit of talk around a player down in South at the moment, Brandon Smith. What's your thoughts on him?
Well, I guess we touched on this about 6 weeks ago, didn't we, Tristan? When we're heading into the end of October and the start of November, and the key date being the 1st of November, where the contract date for signing ahead then rolls over, and we have this farcical situation, which we've said many times, that players can sign elsewhere and be courted elsewhere. But yeah, the whole Brandon Smith thing, it's almost been like a show ring pony. I mean, he's been waltzed around all of these clubs. I mean, he had time on the Gold Coast and he was up in Brisbane, but it's all been at the media expense that he's been showing here, there and everywhere. Then he has a week in Sydney and, you know, there's photos everywhere of him playing golf with the players at the Roosters, and then the fact that he's out dining, not only meeting with the coach, but then I believe later that night I had dinner with a couple of their board members, and then the next day announces that he's going to the club. Now, all of that, I just think, is the wrong way about it. But so be it if that's what is unfolding. But then how he handled himself with, going on the podcast and swearing and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I just couldn't give a rat's about that. It's the fact of what he actually had to say, and I think the clear tone of disrespect to Bellamy, Panisi and all of the team at the Storm who have looked after him all of the way through. Now, there's no doubt that he wanted to get a bigger contract. He's now achieved that. But I think the way that he's handled himself, he's just really let himself down. I go a little further than Brandon Smith. I mean, where the hell's his manager and mentor and a few of these other people been in actually giving him some advice and showing him the right way to handle this with a little decorum, and, you know, announced from the Storm that he's leaving, then the club that he's going to, and just move on?
Yeah, you've obviously been involved in a lot of contracts and those sort of things over the while. Hads, have you got any, like, what was your take on the situation?
Yeah, I think it was just really un-Melbourne-like. He came down to Melbourne as an okay player, and through that great system of Melbourne, they've turned him into a superstar of the game. And he's got a reputation. He's a bit cheeky, and he likes to have a bit of fun. But there's also a line you've got to respect where you came from. They've done a really good job down there. But I don't think Melbourne, to me, will be that worried whether he stays or he goes. They've got a mentality down there, the next man in. You got Harry Grant there waiting. And to me, he doesn't look like he's engaged into what they're trying to achieve down there. And they've been known to let players go if they go outside that bubble of what Melbourne Storm stand for. So to me, he just looked like he stepped out of that bubble. It'd be interesting to talk to him whether he'd take some of the stuff back that he did. With these negotiations, all players have got the right to negotiate and get the best deal, but you've got to do it in a tasteful way. And I think that's the biggest disrespect he showed to Melbourne, who have done a really good job to develop into the player he is.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely. Like, I think there's been a couple of trains of thought there where people saying different things about the whole situation. I'm the same as you, Jared. I can't care about the swear words or the way he's spoken in that sense, because he is a character, and you don't want to take that side of it away. But it's that respect for the team and respect for the group of blokes that you've, you know, got very close to winning a premiership with only a few months ago. And also by the same token, from the Rooster side of it, like, they're very, Trent Robinson has them under such a tight leash. I'm not so sure that'd be overly wrapped with how this has been done on the flip side as well. So it's a really interesting one. The thing that I look at from the Storm point of view is you've got two blokes there where I think there was a lot spoken about Christian Welsh potentially going up to headline the new club. And he stayed without any bells and whistles. He's stuck with Melbourne. And I think you just see that the different ways players lead and lead inside the club. And, I think Melbourne are always going to be that team that retain the players that they really want to retain. And if someone is... You know, they probably could have found a few extra dollars to keep Brandon Smith if they really wanted to, and maybe they've shown their hand there and potentially proven themselves to be right.
Well, I think you touched on a couple of key points. I mean, one is, there's some criticism over recent days that we don't want characters in the game. It's got nothing to do with that. We absolutely love the fact that he might be a character. It's actually how you handle yourself at the right time. Secondly, I know for a fact, coming out of the Roosters yesterday, they're absolutely ropeable about a couple of things that he did say, because he certainly said, and let the cat out of the bag about a couple of things that just didn't need to be said. And then lastly, let's talk about the Storm. You touch on it so acutely. Let's go back to the week, the nights after the Storm got knocked out. Now, in the week after that event, the Storm rallied around and looked after he and Munster and all of that, and tried to move things forward in a professional way. I mean, certainly they didn't deserve what's unfolded over recent days. And the two key players that have had signings over the recent weeks in, you touch on, you know, Christian Welsh and how he's handling himself, but also Kaufusi. Kaufusi signed with the Dolphins. Did we see him up there whining and dining around Redcliffe or wearing a Dolphins jersey or talking or whatever? He hasn't actually said a word. I mean, an announcement was made by the Dolphins, an announcement was made by the Storm, and everybody just moves on.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's an interesting space now for the Dolphins where they haven't been able to get a lot of these key targets. So it's going to be interesting how Wayne Bennett moves forward over the next period, because there's a few players that are that pool starting to diminish a little bit, and they're going to have their work cut out for them to have a competitive side for next year. Any thoughts on that, Jared?
Well, I think what's going to unfold, Tristan, now is that with the passing of these recent weeks and them not getting any of those big notable people that they did go after. And I've mentioned previously, you know, they threw an absolute truckload at Tino to try and move him out of the Titans. I know that he accepted a big chunk of money less to stay at the Titans. Smith was one. They've certainly gone strongly after Munster and a couple of other players. I think that what we're going to see over the next 6 months is a number of good quality B graders get paid A-plus money to end up at the Titans. They're going to have to pay overs for guys who are good team players, but not marquee players. And I think that puts a cat amongst the pigeons. And it also then suggests how strong Redcliffe's going to be in 12 months' time to start the competition. I think they'll be competitive. I mean, you know, Bennett's a winner. He knows how to put the right combinations together, but it's very different to what he's done previously because it's not an open market and he's not returning to Brisbane where, you know, there were a lot of players playing in a local competition ready to play first grade. This is a very different scenario.
Yeah, I find it interesting. And one thing with Wayne Bennett, you can never doubt him. He doesn't give much away in the media. And to me, yes, they've missed a few of the big names off market, but they'll put a team together. But they also have a plan on what success looks like. What's it look like in the first year, the second year? When do we want to start playing finals? If we target, I think I'd imagine they'd target some kids to get the best kids in and develop them over the next couple of years and go to market with marquee signings then to see where they can make it then into the finals. So, yeah, it looks a bit grim in that now, but to me, they'll have a plan and Wayne Bennett will just be sitting back and enjoying all the banter, knowing behind closed doors he's got everything under control.
I think the other key talking point of the last 10 days has been the Parramatta Eels. I mean, the last time they won a competition, they were taking selfies in a phone box. You know, what is it, 38 years or something like that? All of a sudden now it's a matter of last man out, please turn the lights off for who's going to be there in February next year. There's clearly a lot of argy-bargy internally between the coach and the football management team about what numbers they should be paying for who. They've now lost three very key signings to other clubs. I think that undermines internally the unity of how they might then prepare and play next year. They've been well short. They ended up upping their deal for Mahoney, yet weren't prepared to go to 4 years as the Bulldogs were. So they've lost a couple of key back rowers who have been quality players and standout players for them this year. They've now lost their number nine. I think Dylan Brown's been shopped around anywhere and everywhere for the last 3 or 4 months. Very interesting what unfolds there. And I think all the mail has been that Redcliffe have thrown an absolute fortune now at Junior Paulo, having missed Tino, and that he may well be a key signing over coming weeks. If they end up getting him, well, there's number four that might not be there next year. And there's so not only are the Dolphins going to want to be active, the Eels are going to want to be active.
Very, very interesting time. And speaking about, we're talking about Bennett knowing the way to get success. There's something about success that's really kicked off in the last week or so since Jimmy's been gone, and that's been your NFL record, Jarrett. So we got a couple of winners there last week for passing on clothing, and I think you've been performing pretty well away from it. What's your thoughts on the weekend coming up this week?
Well, I just thought we might touch on college football before we start on the NFL, Tristan. I mean, talk about Alan Bond moments. Now, there's been a couple of really big plays in the last week over there, and I'm sure that any of our interested NFL listeners are aware of how big college football is. But last weekend, we had a big game on the Sunday in the US where Michigan finally beat their key rivals. And then the broadcast numbers come out this morning. There were 16 million US people watching that game live. That's how big the college market is. So we've seen the Oklahoma coach, Lincoln Riley, pinched by the big LA university who have been floundering for a number of years, and that's USC. Now, that LA market is just enormous, and they're all about winning franchises, and this university has been struggling for a number of years. But how's this for a payday? He's signed a 10-year deal on $110 million. The university have bought his two homes, which were investments in Oklahoma, but paid $5,000 above market value for both of them. So there's $500,000. So there's $1 million bonus straight away to kick in. They've bought him a $6 million home in LA for he and his family, his wife and two daughters, and given him unlimited use of the private jet 24/7, 365 days of the year. Now, there's a massive deal. Now, talk about a man who might have an elephant on his shoulder in the next couple of years, but come either way, $110 million over 10 years and all of those flavorings, that's enormous. But on the NFL front, well, the Titans. Now, we were talking about them a couple of weeks ago. They were rolling along. They've all of a sudden lost two key games. They've fallen down in the seedings. They actually have the highest number of players used and out with injury this season. And the key is if they get Henry back into the finals and also can keep themselves up the top of those seedings. The other side in the AFC that just keep rolling along are those Patriots. Now, they haven't played anybody, but they keep winning. They've won six from their last six. Mac Jones just keeps getting better by the week. I mean, you just see the magic of the coach. He knows how to get the system right. He's slowly developing that kid. He's slowly developing the plays around them, and they are getting better by the week. Now, they've got a really tough run home, but a great game on Monday up against the Bills. I actually think that they can beat the Bills outright because the Bills have got a couple of key defensive players out at the moment. The Ravens, well, that Lamar Jackson, I'm not sure if we watched that game. It was a little bit like watching paint dry when they beat the Browns 16-10. There wasn't a lot of points in that game, but he pulled out two touchdowns where he was on his back foot being pushed around and chased by defenders, yet was able to find two players to come up with two key wins. They're just ticking over nicely. The Cardinals, 9-2, they're now at the top of those seedings. They get the Chicago Bears this weekend. I think they're back winning again. So they'll go to 10-2. We'll touch on them because I think they're one of the bets of the week. And then your man, A-Rod, Tristan, over at the Packers. Again, he just pulls his magic out. They are yet under Matt LaFleur to lose two in a row since he's been head coach. That's 2.5 seasons where they've only had 9 losses but never gone back-to-back. Now, there's a nice betting angle for the weeks ahead. Let's hope we don't break that one. I thought the two bets of the week, let's go to Arizona-Chicago. I just touched on that a moment ago. I mean, Tristan, the Bears played the Lions last week on Thanksgiving Thursday.
Strong form, yeah. Line.
Talk about watching grass grow. That has to be one of the lowest games I think the NFL has ever seen. And it's scheduled in for Thanksgiving every year, and everybody's saying, how the hell can we have the Lions playing when they're yet to win a game at such a horrible record? I think that's a terrible form reference. They only won by a point. Arizona come back off a bye, look at full strength. I can't see how the line is only 7.5. I certainly thought it was at least 11 or more. So let's go all into Arizona minus 7.5 at $1.90. And then I thought the other nice matchup over the weekend, Tampa Bay, Brady had the Bucs winning again last weekend. They play Atlanta Falcons, who were certainly struggling. They come off a win, but it was a very low form game. The last three times that the Bucks have played Atlanta, they've absolutely put points through them, scored 40 or more in each of those occasions when winning. I thought the total points over 50 looked way too low, because if the Bucks are true to form and scoring anywhere between high 30s to early 40s, which has been their mantra all season, and Atlanta just contribute a little bit to that, then I certainly think that they'll be covering that points. So over 50 at $1.87 with Top Sport as well.
The only thing I'll query the punters on the Arizona-Chicago game is that in our little group chat with Jared and Jimmy, Jared, I've never seen him so confident about a game all season as this one. And Jimmy was reaching for different devices, trying to get access in America to get some sort of investment on the Arizona Cardinals. And he has been known to stop a site. So that would be my only little query on this. But yeah, they certainly look like they're the team that's going to be very hard to beat. They're just flying under the radar for Super Bowl betting as well. But I know there was one very happy man, as you touched on, the Detroit-Chicago game wasn't the highlight of the Thanksgiving weekend. But there was one man on this call that did enjoy the day. And the Raiders did have a very, very impressive victory against the Dallas Cowboys. How do you think they're going to go this weekend, Bradley?
Man, I think they'll get over Washington, but I tell you what, mate, New England Patriots, what I like about, I'm a sports nuffy, so I like seeing guys back to the wall. What about the coach? Under pressure at the start of the year, everyone's saying, oh, and it's a Brady influence when he goes. I just love how they have confidence in what they need to do. They win big moments. They make big decisions. And look, they're going on a run now. As you said before, Joe, not the best teams, but I just love those offside battles in sport that you can't write off class. And that's what Belichick is. He's a class performer. He's done it under pressure. And that, to me, I love seeing those stories when someone's got to write them off, but they just keep coming back, stick to the plan. And you know what? Who knows where it'll end?
Well, the other thing, too, about the Pats is, about 2 years ago, as the story goes, Belichick was happy to actually relinquish such a hands-on role in what they're doing with a lot of their draft picks. And then out of the most recent draft prior to Christmas, there was quite a bit of criticism about who they actually drafted and what picks they took, and the fact that they took, you know, Mac Jones as number five quarterback, and lo and behold, you know, not only Mac Jones is all of a sudden, I think, the standout of the five key quarterbacks that came through that draft, but there's two or three other players that are now playing for them and absolute standouts who 4 or 5 months ago were the brunt of criticism that what are the Pats doing, picking this guy and that guy. And again, it just shows the magic of the man. And I just love him after a win when he's in a press conference and they're bantering him with all these just questions. And it's just a shrug of the shoulders here or a wink of the eyebrow there. He's got nothing to say. I mean, the man's just an absolute master, isn't he?
Well, one of the things that I think probably flies under the radar is last year they were lacking so many of their defensive, A grade. So their season last year was, probably it appeared as though it was underperforming on paper, but really they were always going to be up against it. And he had Cam Newton there, and he's made that really clinical decision to go with a youngster, you know, where maybe Cam would have looked a lot better in the system this year with that better defensive line, but he's gone for the future. He, even when he had that immediate pressure on him with all the talk about Brady, and it's paying dividends straight away. They're only going to get better as they get closer to the end of the season too. So I reckon this game against the Bills, it's $2.28 the Patriots, $1.65 Buffalo. I agree. I think it should be a little bit closer than what it is. 2.5, 206 the plus. It's going to be a really good game. It's the marquee game of the weekend. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think we'll get a very good form line on where both of those two teams sit. If you're having a look at the Super Bowl betting at the moment, you've got Tampa Bay favourites at $6. About a month ago, Kansas were gone. They're into second favourite at $7.50. Green Bay at $8.50. Arizona $9. Buffalo $9. And then we've got the Patriots just behind them at $11. And just scrolling down a little bit, the Raiders there at $81, just in front of my Detroit Lions.
Well, I suggested a couple of weeks ago on Jimmy's show and on the podcast that I was very keen about the Packers long term. They were $9.25 with you at that stage. Now, a week later, they went to $11 off a rare loss. But now into, what, $8.50, I think they are, Tristan. I and that's the side I want to anchor all around for the Super Bowl. I think that we all know that the NFC is a much, much stronger conference. I think that as they get fitter, I think the record in the last 3 weeks, they've had 10 key players out with injury over the last 3 to 4 weeks. They will get most of those guys back in the roll into the finals. You know, they funnily say in the US at the moment, Aaron Rodgers is only playing on 9 toes. Well, once he gets the other big foot ready and going, I mean, he's just a master, as he showed again last week, pulling them through a really good win over the Rams. So the Packers are where I want to be for the Super Bowl.
And we had an interesting day of racing last weekend where we had the big feature in Ascot, and lo and behold, Pikey gets up almost at double figure odds. He leads the charge in the Kingston Town this weekend, which is the last Group One of the year in Ascot, where he's already been well supported on Western Empire. It's $1.45 into $1.35, so it's hard to see, you know, him being under too much threat in that race. It's disappointing to see that we haven't got the depth of the fields over there in Perth this year, but it is what it is. And I'm sure we'll still sort of make a bit of, there'll be plenty of good turnover, a few multis running through that. We've also got the Pakenham Cup in as well on Saturday, where the Smoking Romans is the favourite, 310 out to 330. Have you got any plays for the weekend that you want to share, Jared?
Well, I thought with the Pakenham Cup, certainly Smoking Romans, when I was looking at the form this morning, 3:30 favourite, but deservedly, it's had a couple of very good runs around that distance at 2,400, steps at 2,500, you know, nicely weighted, gets a good draw and map. I certainly think it's the horse to beat. I thought the better today might have been race 4, number 1, Marine 1. Very surprised at the price of $4.60 with you at the moment. I mean, it drops out of a Group 1 last start where it certainly embarrassed, got beat by 6 lengths, but really a big drop in grade back here. It's had a 35-day freshen up off that. Group 1 back to this level, gets a 3-kilo claim. I mean, Ma Eustace is very, very astute about what they do with their placement. It won its 2 races prior to that Group 1 win by 2.8 and 1.2 lengths. And I just thought it should have been half that price and a very warm favourite here. And the other big thing of the weekend is we've got Jamie Carr back in the saddle. And I think she is riding Smoking Romans in the cup.
Yes, well, it'll be interesting how she, you know, she's had a long layoff, as we know. So it'll be interesting coming back. She is in the saddle for Smoking Romans. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting first day back. There'll be plenty of eyes on her. And, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Brad, have you got anything you wanted to contribute to the racing side of things?
Yeah, I see the Pakenham Cup. I like Smoking Romans with Carr back on, but I like Team Captain with Blake McDougall. He's been riding well, so I'm going to have a little go at that. But I want to come back to the Mudgee Cup. Lady Love to Gamble, Bjorn Baker. Race 7, number 6 at Mudgee. That's my bet of the week.
Yeah, so that one's on Friday. So, yeah, Race 7, number 6. It's already been a little bit of support, $7 into $6.50. So, there's plenty of good races, good country cups going around the traps at the moment. So they seem to be popping up most days, which is great now that we've got away from the absolute spring. So, yeah, with out of the Bjorn Baker yard. So $7 into $6.50, a little bit of support. That's tomorrow, race 7, number 6.
Well, the Baker stable are very good at taking their horses to the country for the right races and picking the right ones up. And I think they're also pretty clever at picking the right race to back them too. So looks very well placed in the Mudgee Cup. And Trish and I was diving through your markets there this morning to see whether the boys had any special markets up for Pakenham Day. And I couldn't find the one about anybody staying at Mornington on Friday or Saturday night through the weekend. But anyway, we'll let that one go through. But let's hope Pakenham is always a tricky track to win at.
I'll play a nice leave to that one, Jared. So, but it's an interesting meeting coming up. Plenty of racing, and we've got plenty of bets here on the program. As you said, we'll just touch on them for passing on clothing. We got up to nearly $2,000 in the kick now, and we've got a couple of bets there. We'll go Pakenham Race 4, number 1, Marine 1. We'll go the Mudgee Cup Race 7, number. What do we say? Race 7, number 6, Lady Loves to Gamble. And then we've got our 2 NFL bets for the weekend. We've got Arizona minus 7.5 at $1.90. Over 50 flat at $1.87, the Tampa Bay Atlanta game. Jared, you just want to touch on a couple of things of what's happening there for Pass On Clothing in the lead into Christmas?
Well, I was going to ask, can I go out on a limb here, Tristan, and throw one more bet in for the weekend? Why don't we go in the first test? I'll be the leper in the room and have $50 on England at 440 to win the first test, see if we can maybe pick some money up there. I think that price is just way too big. They should be much, much closer than that for mine. Pass It On Clothing, they've got their Christmas appeal at the moment. Once we tip that $2,000 in, Tristan, there'll be, I think, somewhere around $9,100, which is just amazing. The goal was to raise $10,000. Between the money that we've kicked in and the money off social media from anybody and everybody being so generous is just amazing. They help the homeless across Sydney and Gosford every week. Do just an amazing deal. So if anybody can contribute there, I'm putting a little challenge up on social media this week to try and find some extra people to kick some money in with me and see if we can get that to $9,500 by Monday. And then it might be downhill to get the rest in before Christmas. So Pass It On Clothing, folks. Check them out on Twitter or Facebook. They just do an amazing job looking after the homeless of Sydney and Gosford.
Well said, and I think that sort of probably wraps up the day. Brad, thanks for jumping in. It's been great to have you for the last couple of weeks. Jimmy's back next week. Will be interesting to see if we let him back in, or if he comes in as a guest spot, or what the story is. I'm sure he'll have control over that. But you've done really well, Jared. Thanks as always, and hope everyone enjoys the show. Make sure you subscribe and do all that sort of stuff. I don't know how to host this as well as what Jimmy does, but it's always been fun as usual. And make sure you check out all of the cricket action, all of the NFL action coming up on topsport.com.au. Thanks, guys.
Have a great weekend, gentlemen.
Have the Aussies.
Reading the Play is Australia's favourite source of NRL and horse racing tips. Our professional analysts provide the sporting enthusiast with the best of the best. Get the best professional tips and previews from our tipsters direct to your phone. Readingtheplay.com.